On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of the Tall Can Audio podcast. My name's Matt Robinson. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening to this one right now. Give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. I'm really excited to be welcoming to the podcast today one of my favorite play-by-play guys, Paul Romanuk, is here. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you for the kind introduction. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
No complaints. The first question, I guess, that I've been asking most people here lately is, what is keeping Paul Romanuk busy while we're all sort of stuck at home or kind of through these pandemic times?
Well, it's been a blessing. I like to golf, so it's been a blessing since the golf course is opened, and you can at least go up and walk around and stretch your legs and have some, albeit socially distanced, but have some human contact. And then other than that, I'm working on a couple of podcasts, one of which is already launched. And I do a little bit of teaching and some stuff around the house, and the days fly by.
Okay. One of the ways that I'm typically able to lure people into the studio and onto the show is by, you know, gently reminding them that one of the things that we do here while we chat is try a new or a different local craft beer. And of course, through the pandemic, it really hasn't panned out too well, but my listeners still want me to ask, are you a craft beer guy? Are you into that scene at all?
Oh, you bet. No, I've got a couple of beauties that I can highly recommend if you can.
I'm
in the Toronto. There's a little brewery called Lost Craft, L-O-S-T, Craft, C-R-A-F-T, and they do a number of beers, but they do one called a Revive Ale, which is a lagered ale, if you will, and it is really nicely done. And then there's another one that if you have to look for positives in the pandemic, they've changed the laws in Ontario where you can now order directly from the brewery,
right,
and they will deliver it to your door. So it's a great little microbrewery called Wellington Brewery down in Guelph, Ontario. And I've been sampling their best bitter, which is outstanding. Mm. And then their it's a Helles Lager that they do. So
I've tried that one. That's a nice beer.
Yeah, really nice. I like the Helles Lager. It's got real European type, craftsmanship to it. Not overly malty, but a nice crisp lager taste. And then the best bitter is just a nice low alcohol, nice drinking bitter.
Okay. So people be able to check those out if you're into such things. I'm going to jump around here a little bit, but only because it's sort of come to mind. You spent some time over in London. Did you get into too much of their beer scene at all? Was that something new, something different?
Oh, I mean, it's the mecca for it's got to be one of the best cities in the world. I lived there from 2005 until pretty much the end of 2014, so 9 years. And the craft beer thing was taking off, really starting to take off when I moved there. So mid, 20s. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are a ton. And of course Something that they do there still is you can get real ale. So it's a cask ale or a bitter. Typically, it's usually an ale and fermented in the barrel, and then they deliver it with a hand pump. So there's no gas used at all. And it's, you know, it's just beautiful, smooth drink, low carbonation, which makes it go down a little nicer. So, there's some great ones over there. St. Peter's Brewery is one that stands out. It was an early craft beer that I really liked over there. And then there have a ton of others that I don't think you can get here.
Why don't we start with, you referenced the podcast world here off the top. Tell us a little bit about the new show that's out now. I've caught, I think, 3 out of the first 4 episodes so far. Really enjoying it thus far. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, good man. I appreciate your ears. It's called The Walrus Was Paul. And if you get that reference, it's a Beatles reference. So the podcast, is for you. It's a pretty simple premise. I speak to a Canadian music person, usually a musician or a writer, but there'll be other people as well. And we go through track by track their favorite Beatles or Beatles solo record. And I've had some great guests on so far. I've had a couple of guys, Jim Cuddy and Colin Cripps from Blue Rodeo, had Stephen Page on, ex of the Bare Naked Ladies, Dave Bedini from the Real Statics. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's kept me busy, got me into the podcast world, which I was a little bit hesitant to jump into. And it also has, allowed me to sort of stroke my passion for music, and particularly of a lot of British music and the Beatles, which I've always had. So it's been nice to kind of take the sports hat off for a while. I'm really enjoying it.
I'm curious, while you were over in London, obviously speaking of the Mecca, is that a passion that you're able to feed a little more easily? Are you, I know you were there for several years, but, are there sites that you had to see while you were there, things like that? And I wonder if that contributed to this idea of starting up a podcast about the Beatles here a little while later.
Well, I've been a Beatles fan, me and millions of others, so hardly unique, hundreds of millions of others. But since I was a kid, and it was a big brother of my best friend who kind of introduced me to the Beatles. And so I started getting into them in the, very early 70s. So it was pretty much done and dusted as far as, being a working band was concerned. I remember Let It Be actually coming out. I guess a roundabout way to answer your question, I don't know that that fueled my passion anymore, but the cool thing about London, London being a global capital, and so things happen there. And so you'd walk around London, and of course, the one everybody knows is the Abbey Road crosswalk.
Sure.
I saw times and walked across, but then there are other little places. You're wandering. We lived in Battersea, which is an area south of the river from Chelsea, and so to walk up to the King's Road in Chelsea, which is shopping and pubs and so on, and my route to walk up there took me a little road called Flood Street, walking through the lower part of Chelsea. Well, It sort of twigged a bell for some reason. And then I looked in a little book that I have called The Beatles London, which has, places in London where the Beatles were and things happened. And sure enough, Flood Street, Michael Cooper's photography studio was in this little nondescript looking place on Flood Street. And that is where the cover for Sergeant Pepper was shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you walk by and you go, really cool. And then another neat place in sort of, more central London, not far at all from Piccadilly Circus, you wander up into the tailoring district and you get onto Savile Row. And, there's number 3 Savile Row. That's the building on top of which the Beatles played their last ever concert. That was the rooftop concert, was at Savile Row. And so there are tons of little places like that. So if you're a Beatles fan, it was neat to sort of walk by and go, oh, wow, hey, Jimi Hendrix lived there. And the Beatles headquarters was there. And there's Abbey Road. And there's the place where they, there's where the Bag of Nails used to be, where they'd hang out with Mick Jagger and all those little things.
That's really cool. Like just in terms of being able to, you know, even if you're not going out of your way to sightsee and find Beatles things, just knowing as you're walking by and be like, if you're a fan of that sort of thing, right, just go, oh, that looks familiar, or I know this happened here. It's kind of a cool backdrop. As you say, London being one of the world capitals, tons of history, and certainly for music buffs. I want to stay in London for a little while, if that's okay with you, because you sort of disappeared on me. I heard you calling all kinds of, you were doing Raptors last, I think, before you left for London. Is that right?
Yeah, the quick little update is I was at TSN for about 17 years, mm-hmm. left TSN, did a morning show on what they were trying to do, a national sports radio network. That only lasted about 18 months. And then I was doing some work for Leafs TV and so on. And then you would have caught up with me again. I was the radio play-by-play voice of the Toronto Raptors. And unfortunately, that only lasted for one season. It was for the 04-05 season.
Right.
Fantastic. Absolutely loved it. And it would have been a job I would have stayed in for, you know, probably the rest of my career had we not moved. But the opportunity came to move to the UK. So, yeah, we ended up over there. And then while I was there, you would have heard me on the Spengler Cup. I worked on a couple of Olympic Games when I was living there for CBC, and then one for the CTV version in London. So I was still around.
Yeah.
I certainly retire from broadcasting at all, but I guess to somebody in Canada, I certainly wasn't around as much as I was during my TSN days.
Well, I'll be honest with you, you know, the World Juniors is a big deal around Christmas, but one of the reasons that I always made sure I was watching some of the Spengler Cup was to get, you know, little Paul Romanuk back, because you were calling hockey games all the way through my kind of formative years and, you know, while I was learning to love the NHL. So it was cool to hear you. And like you say, you did pop up here and there at other places. You mentioned London 2012. I wonder, I bet you probably don't get asked about this too much, but one of my closest friends and a woman who sometimes co-hosts this podcast, her name's Amy Burke, and she is a three-time Paralympian. And one of the places that you popped up was the London 2012 Paralympic Games, doing nightly updates for, I think it was CTV still at that point, or TSN maybe. How does that opportunity present itself, and what was that experience like? It's a little different than some of the other major events you've called.
Well, I was there doing the I was living in London at the time, and I was hired by the CTV broadcast consortium, as they called themselves, to work on the Olympics as a play-by-play announcer. And I ended up doing men's and women's triathlon, which was kind of cool. It was Simon Whitfield's sort of farewell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then and I'm having a mental block. Young woman, fantastic athlete, and she came back too soon and had just probably one of the worst days of her sporting life. And that was the women's triathlon. So
right.
Two pretty big events from a Canadian perspective. And then I also did weightlifting, which was interesting because I hadn't done weightlifting before. And as all that was going on, they were planning to do their coverage of the Paralympics. Now, my recollection, and you know, your memory is not always the best recollection. My recollection is that they had a host, or they hadn't solidified what their broadcast plans were going to be. But at some point early in the Olympics, I was approached by them and they said, would you like to host the Paralympics and do nightly updates and some voiceovers and then basically host? And I said, yeah, are you kidding? That would be absolutely fantastic. And that's how the opportunity presented itself. And it was great. You know, it introduced me to a bunch of sports that for obvious reasons I wasn't that familiar with, because mm-hmm. their Paralympic sports tend not to be high profile at all.
Right.
Until the Paralympics are on. So it was really, really cool. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And yeah, it's one of those things that just sort of happened and you didn't expect, and turned out to be a great experience.
It was a lot of fun to watch that from my perspective, to see this play-by-play guy that you've been watching your entire life suddenly calling out your best friend's name and you know, recapping the day's events. It was a unique experience, if nothing else, as a viewer. It was really cool to see.
The neat thing about doing an event like that, I mean, I've done more professional sports than I could than I could recount. But the cool thing about doing something like the Paralympics or anything that kind of brushes with the amateur world is, unlike pro athletes, most of these people don't get interviewed a lot and don't have a lot of attention paid to them. So they're genuinely happy to see you and happy to engage in more than just a top line conversation. And it's really refreshing, to cover athletes who are, another one for me like that back earlier in my career was, it was in the infancy of women's international hockey and the athletes on our women's national team, it was just night and day with talking to NHL guys. It was really refreshing on both counts.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you're so right. Like, just to be able to turn on TSN, where you're always watching your hockey games and the Raptors and whatever else, and go, there's my friend, or there's, someone who never gets any attention. Here they are for a couple of weeks, the whole world's watching. And that's really cool. I wonder, as we kind of make our way through this, before you end up back in North America, how much you were still engaged with North American sports while in London. You're a 5-hour time difference away from the North American East Coast. A lot of stuff going on in the middle of the night. Did you sort of take a break from the sports world, or did you still have to see your, whether it be the Raptors or you have an NFL team or whatever might be going on over there?
There's a couple of points to your question. You touch on one of them, in that it's not first and foremost. There's the 5-hour time shift as well, but it's also, what are people talking about and what are people writing about? And I can assure you that nobody in the UK talking or writing or a rat's ass about the NHL or the NBA. Maybe the NFL, a bit of a following, maybe, but like nothing. What they're talking about is football or soccer, call it, cricket, rugby. Those are the big, those are the big sports. And so those are what your buddies in the pub are talking about. That's what's in the sports pages that you're reading about. That's what the conversation is on television, on sports programs. So you tend to get into it. And I always liked soccer, but I really got into it when I lived there, for all those reasons that I just mentioned. Learned a lot more about cricket and really got into rugby. Learned a lot more about that. Now, did I follow North American sports? I absolutely did. I mean, one of the great things about the age we live in is it's just a matter of logging on your computer in the morning, going to NHL.com, and I could watch highlights or compressed games or full games of anything that I was interested in. So I still did follow it. Did I stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch regular season NHL games? No, I did not. I've got it. Playoff games, the odd time. Yeah, I'd stayed up late, for the late puck drop. But for the most part, you're following what you're living.
Is it hockey night in Canada and the Rogers deal that brings you home, or were you coming home and thus were ready to take on a position like that?
No, they recruited me to come back. I certainly was interested in it. I mean, I don't want to create the impression that I didn't jump out of my skin. Keith Pelley was the guy who was instrumental in getting me back. Keith Pelley and a guy named Gord Cutler were instrumental. Keith Pelley, as soon as they got the deal, like literally within an hour after it was announced, he had sent me a text and he said, we're bringing you back to do play-by-play. So I knew that early that I would be coming back. And then it was just a matter of working through all the logistics and so on and so forth. But that's what got me back. Without question, every kid who puts on a play-by-play headset in Canada to do sports, that's the ultimate, is to be on Hockey Night in Canada. That was a dream come true for me, and something I'm grateful that I got to do for 4 years. I'm bitter that they broke the deal we have. And, me and a lot of other really good people who I stand proudly with, Glenn Healy, Mike Johnson, Darren Millard, Dave Randorf, I could go on down the list, who were undermined by this deal. But there's nothing I can do about that now. But to come back and do it, that's why I came back. I mean, it was a dream come true.
You mentioned some great names there. How much of a chance have you had to – Did you get to work with Mike Johnson much? To me, he might be the best color guy in the business. And even now back at TSN, there, I think he does some Habs games and he's doing some radio work and stuff. But man, I've always felt like that guy needs to be spotlighted a lot more. Have you worked with him much?
Well, Mike was, you know, the color. Mike and I were the team for the first couple of seasons. You know, I did most of my games with Mike Johnson, and I would echo your comments. I mean, Mike is, if he's not the best color guy I ever worked with, he's certainly tied for the best color guy. He is a talent. He gets it. He's an intelligent guy. Articulates his thoughts very well, and it was an absolute joy to work with him. And it is beyond me why Rogers didn't see that. It's just mind-boggling to me that they let a talent like that, you know, well, not that they let him walk out the door, that they pushed him out the door.
Right.
And likewise with Glenn Healy. I mean, Glenn Healy was the first really great between the bench guy, respected around the league. And again, I thought he was a big part of the Saturday night Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. And there's another guy who they pushed out the door. So it's weird. And, you know, I'd love to work with Mike Johnson again. That was one of the big regrets for me when he left, because I thought we were a really good broadcast team.
Yeah. Well, you'll forgive me for not knowing that. I'm a Leaf guy. So most of the time that I saw you working, it was with Greg Millen. So, that was a cool thing for me to know that you were coming back. You were going to do a lot of those Leaf games. Did that help lure you back? I know you're a GTA guy. The Leafs are, you know, the number one market in the NHL. Or if they had called and said, you know, you're going to do Hockey Night and some Flames or whatever it would be, was it the fact that it was going to be a lot of Toronto games? Did that contribute anything to it? Or
I would have come back just to do Hockey Night in Canada. So now getting to do the Leafs was, of course, you know, I mean, it's the number one, they're the number one team in Canada, you know, but maybe the Raptors are now, but right. In terms of, you know, media interest, television numbers, however you want to parse it, people in Calgary and Winnipeg and everywhere else will hate me saying that, but the facts speak for themselves. I mean, the biggest, you know, regional TV numbers are for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, that was absolutely fantastic. And I love doing that as well. That was a big part of it. But to answer your question, I would have come back to do anything on Hockey Night in Canada. It was nice that the Leafs were a part of it, but they didn't have to be.
So I was doing a little research before we talked, and my memory had lied to me. I thought your first year back was that first Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Austin Matthews year, but you were back for that garbage year just beforehand as well, where it was, you know, tanking and so welcome back. Here's a pretty bad team, but I do want to ask you about that season that I thought was your first back, which is, you know, that first game, Austin Matthews against the Ottawa Senators. There's some calls in there of yours that still give me goosebumps now, the Matthews magnificent, things like that. And they keep showing his parents. What is that night like? And is that, you know, does that rank high up there in your events that you've been able to call?
Oh, without question. I mean, that was, it was, you know, I mean, in hindsight, just a monumental night. And it was neat because you knew at the time, and I remember I'd done some season games with, of course, with Matthews playing. And it was a big deal that he was here for, you know, obvious reasons. And you sort of had an inkling. I thought, well, you know, I wonder if he'll score his first goal. So you're kind of aware of, you want to keep your eyes on him and make sure that you can do a call that's going to be, equal to the measure of what he's achieved. Right. So and by that, I mean, you hope it's not a deflection. You hope it's not in off a skate. You hope it's not a scramble totally. And you can identify him before he chops the puck home or whatever. So you're aware of where he is on the ice. So we got that first one, and hey, his friend, you know, think in your mind, yeah, that was cool. Austin Matthews' first NHL goal. Kind of neat to have been able to call that.
Nylander gets it in front of the net. Holland trying to get untangled. Puck goes around. Matthews scores!
But then, to me, the one that I remember the most, and I think it was the nicest goal he scored, was the second one where he started – if memory serves correct, it was just outside the blue line on the left wing. And he got possession of the puck, came in over the line, undressed Erik Karlsson coming off the boards down by the circle, and then came in and knifed it past the goaltender. Mm-hmm. And that was, wow, like what a goal.
Puck ricocheted up, Hyman looking for it there at the line. This is Matthews, gains control. Trying to find some room. Oh, great work. He gets free. Shoots, scores! What a goal! Matthews, magnificent!
Now he's got two. And then, of course, he got the hat trick.
He says it doesn't matter what league you're coaching in. That's been his experience. Puck out in front. Matthews scores! A hat trick! Oh, my goodness! What a debut!
And then he got four.
Just mixed it with Bobby Ryan. He's got one. Had a great chance at two. Leafs back quickly. Nylander moving in. Works it across in front. He scores! Matthews! What a luminescent night for Auston Matthews. Incredible. Four goals.
And you're wondering, is he going to get five? But to me, it's the second one that stands out the most, is just a, where you sort of went, holy cow, like what a goal that was. And
yeah, because before he has to dance Karlsson like that, he steals it from somebody too. I can't remember who it was, but like you said, just outside the blue line, he takes it away, then dances Karlsson and makes that shot. You're like, look at this kid, like unbelievable. Oh.
Like that was like the first one, as I recall, it was sort of a scramble around the front of the net, and he ended up slamming it home, and then, you know, that was fine. First NHL goal, it was great, but that second one was really, that's where he put his marker down and said, okay, I'm here, and I can more than play at this level. Like, what a goal to score!
You were involved in a lot of international calls. I know. Some of the early World Junior tournaments, as that was starting to grow and become this holiday tradition. One of your calls that stands out to me, obviously right now it's because I'm such a Leaf guy and it's more recent, is that Matthews magnificent. And I'm going to splice that in here just because I think everyone should hear it again. But the drive for five.
The drive for five has arrived. Canada World Junior Hockey Champions for the fifth year in a row.
It is over. Like, do you have one that stands out in your mind as like your favorite call or something that jumps out to you?
I don't know if you have, you know, favorite calls, and when I hear them back, sometimes I'll go, oh yeah, you know, I like that. The one, I guess, that I really remember, quite clearly was the World Hockey Championship. In, I guess it would have been, 1994? I guess I don't remember it that clearly if I have to. And it was Canada's first gold medal at the World Hockey Championship in 33 years. And you have to put that in a bit of context because, again, as just going off memory here, Canada had never done particularly well at the World Championship. It's a tough tournament to win at the best of times. And it was particularly difficult for Canada to do well at back then. And on top of that, we were just coming off of the Lillehammer Olympics, where Canada had lost in a shootout.
Oh, and that's the Forsberg, right?
Yeah, the stamp goal, the famous goal. So it was a challenging time at that level for Canada internationally. And now here we were at the World Championship in Milan, and Glenn Sather was the general manager of the team, and he had really he'd been quite firm and resolute, I guess, in his determination that this Canada team was going to do well at this tournament. You know, it wasn't going to be the usual Canada performance, which was to kind of fizzle out. And so there was a real mood and discipline around the team that I hadn't seen before. And sure enough, they got down to the championship game, and it went down to a shootout against Finland. And it ended up, you know, Luke Robitaille scored the winner. Bill Ranford made the final save that he had to make. And I when you see the call back, it's Ranford is jumping up and down on the ice with his skates on, obviously, and the team's coming out to mob him, and that's, you know, it is over.
Mika Nieminen, number 40, will shoot for Finland. He must score, or Canada wins it.
There yes! it is! It is over! Canada, world champions!
That's one I remember quite clearly, and was a moment that, looking back, it was really cool to be a part of. We've gone on to have pretty good success at that tournament since then, but that was the first time that they'd won it in 33 years, so it was pretty cool.
Then the last one I got for you here, Paul, is a little self-indulgent. I'm Oshawa born and raised, and when I'm looking back and doing some research on you, you did some time calling games for the Oshawa Generals. I wonder, you know, just if you could take me through what that experience was like and, you know, what you remember about calling games at the old Civic there.
Well, like you, as you indicated, I'm from Oshawa. And so you can imagine, I grew up in Oshawa listening to a guy named Bob Burr and Jim Gilchrist doing the Oshawa Generals games on the radio. And I went to every Sunday night Oshawa Generals game when I was a kid. A big OHL Generals fan. So then to have the opportunity to be the radio play-by-play voice of the team when I finished school, the way it happened was that my first play-by-play gig was doing Toronto Marlies games. Toronto had a junior hockey team at the time, and it played out of Maple Leaf Gardens, the Toronto Marlboros. And I did... they did a small number of games. I ended up doing the play-by-play on those games. And Sherry Basson, who was the general manager of the Generals at the time, heard me on the Ryerson campus station, which you could pick up on normal radio, heard me doing the games. And then somebody mentioned to him that I was from Oshawa. And he was like, well, why the hell isn't the kid doing our games? So then what happened was they had a guy there, excellent announcer named Mike Inglis, who was the play-by-play voice of the Generals at the time. And I was contacted by the radio station, I guess through Sherry's urgings. And I would come back and I would do color with Mike on Sundays while I was still at school. So I'd take the train back from Toronto, do the game with Mike. And then as it happened, the year I graduated, Mike left. He went on to take another job somewhere. So they offered me the main play-by-play job of the Generals. And it was, I mean, that was, you can imagine, right? Like,
sure.
It's the team you grew up listening to. And here I was just out of broadcasting school and doing Oshawa Generals games on the radio station that I used to listen to them on. So it's a great, great memory.
You remember any of the names from that era of the Jennies?
Oh, 100% I do. Yeah, absolutely. Paul Terrio was the coach. And then Don Biggs was one of the guys on the team. Gord Murphy was on the team. John Stevens, Jim Pack, Mark Harmon. I could go on. Lee Giffen, Derek King. Scott McCrory, Oshawa Sports Hall of Fame, tons of guys. I remember the team. I did them for several years. So it was cool.
Before we wrap it up then, tell us once more where we can find the podcast.
All right. Well, appreciate that. Yes, you can go to a few ways. You can go to my website, which is RomyCast, RomyCast, RomyCast.com. And you will find all the episodes of the podcast there. You can subscribe at Apple or Spotify or whatever your favorite podcast catcher is. And you can also follow me on Twitter or Instagram. And my handle is the_RomyCast, the_RomyCast. Any of those places you can catch up with me and the Walrus with Paul podcast.
We will share all those links in the show notes as well at tallcanaudio.com, so we'll make sure people can find what they're looking for there. Paul, I really appreciate you doing this. This is a thrill for me. You're one of those voices that, I can remember from all the way through my childhood up till now, and calling all kinds of big events. I really appreciate this. And maybe once the pandemic decides it's finished with us, we can do one of these in person. I can pay up that beer I owe you.
Well, that would be great, and it gives me something to look forward to when all of this surrealness gets wrapped up. And thank you so much for the kind words, and thanks for asking. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
That's the great Paul Romanuk. Make sure you check out the Walrus Was Paul podcast. As I said, we'll share all the links at tallcanaudio.com. Give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram at tallcanaudio, facebook.com/tallcanaudio. We will catch you all on the next episode.
It is over!
Now that's a tasty beverage.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.